So my name's Brian Slade, and I've written the authorised biography of Simon Cadell. Of course, he's best known for Jeffrey and Heidi High in the Croft and Perry world. And that came out a couple of years ago with Fonthill Media. I'd always been a fan of Simon from the 1970s. We used to go on holiday to Butlins, like a lot of people. You know, it was not that dissimilar from what Heidi High depicted in the 70s still. I remember going there, and I've still got photos where there's a big cigarette advertising board outside the main ballroom, you know, huge. It hadn't been updated by then. So Heidi High just was perfect nostalgia for that sort of thing. But then he did something called Life Without George at the end of the 80s, which I loved that show. It was a wonderful show. And it was something I could identify with because it was I was just getting into the employment world, and it was all a bit baffling after leaving school. And his character in there was just completely bemused by the sort of Mrs. Thatcher era of, you know, financial gain and everything, and rather superficial world that we seem to live in those days. And I just felt with Simon there seemed to be a lot more to tell than just the guy who was in Heidi High that died quite young. I thought, no, there's more to him than that. So that's why I chose him, and I'm glad I did, because, you know, he has a huge body of work that nobody really knows about. So. All told, it was probably 2 years from the first approach to the family to getting the book, dropping onto the doormat sort of thing. There's a lot of researching, but I was very lucky because Simon's best friend is Giles Brandreth. And Giles is still in contact with the family. They became good friends as well. So I was fortunate that he put me in touch with the family and sort of did the groundwork for me getting permission to do it. Because without the family support, it would have been very tricky. And Simon's family were so open and friendly with it all. They fully embraced it, which really made the research a lot easier because they had folders full of programs, theatre programs from Simon's theatre where stage work. They had there was a policewoman that adored Simon's work and would go and see all his shows. And when they finished at the theatre, she would go to the management of the theatre and get photos that even the participants weren't getting. And she'd compiled these lovely scrapbooks of newspaper cuttings and photos and everything. And when Simon died, she gave them all over to the family. So Simon's family let me go through those. And of course, David Croft was Simon's father-in-law. And David Croft's archive is colossal. He seemed to not throw anything out. The last time I saw them, they were saying, oh, we just discovered tax returns from the 1960s. he just held everything. So that sort of thing, you know, the family were brilliant with the research, but it's quite time-consuming. And, of course, when you're interviewing people, you've got to, you know, accept that they've got commitments and stage commitments and everything. So, and, of course, when you interview some people, they'll trigger a sort of new line of inquiry, and then you've got to go back to other people and say, oh, when I spoke to so-and-so, they mentioned this, and we didn't discuss that. So all told, it was probably about 2 years from start to finish. So. Yeah, Giles and Simon became friends when they were at school together. So Simon had quite a troubled childhood, didn't settle well into education. And he went to Beedale's, which is the private school in the south, and Giles was there already. Giles was a couple of years older than Simon was. But he was already into full-scale productions of theatre and music and all kinds of things. And he recognised quite early on that Simon had some theatrical talent, so he cast him in Simon's very first thing, which is something called A Study in Sherlock. And he thought Simon was fantastic in it. He was perfect Sherlock Holmes, even at 12 years old or whatever he was at that time. And they became great friends in those days. At school, so this is like the mid-1960s, so most people were buying Rolling Stones albums and, you know, Beatles and all that, and Simon and Giles were doing Flanagan and Allen pastiches and, you know, sharing No Coward albums, completely different to everybody else at the time. And they stayed friends for the rest of their days. I believe they were best man at each other's weddings. In Giles' diaries, which he let me reproduce in this book as well, 4 years after Simon had died, he wrote a letter to Simon on New Year's Eve of the millennium, turning into 2000. Just a sort of, you know, a letter to Simon to say how things had been since Simon had died, sort of thing. It was really one of the most moving things you could read, really touching, and it showed just what incredible friends they were. I think Giles would probably admit now that, you know, there's still not a day goes by when he doesn't think of him, because their friendship was so good. And Giles was brilliant throughout the production of the book. He let me, you know, rummage through his photos and did a few interviews and put me in touch with a few people. So, yeah, it seemed right that he was the one that did the foreword. Yeah, the book's still available. It can be ordered through most places. It was published by Fonthill Media. So it can still be accessed there, but I think most independent bookshops would still be able to get it, and Amazon obviously have it, and Waterstones, places like that. So it's still available quite easily. There's a few thoughts rummaging around in my head. I'm getting itchy fingers now to do something else, and it's trying to find people that have got a little bit more, you know, an interesting story that hasn't been told. I'd like to stick in the sort of Croft and Perry world, because it was a lot of fun, and you know, the amount of people in that sort of genre. David Croft just had a relentless success rate, and the people, one of his most exceptional talents was the ability to cast people properly. I can't think of anything in his sort of arsenal where he didn't get the casting quite right. So there's a lot of great characters in there. I've been making a few sort of tentative inquiries about a few characters from that world, and hopefully something might trigger. So that's a watch this space one, I think. I think the highlight for me of the research was meeting Simon's mum, because she only died last year. She was 96 when she died. And when I first spoke to Simon's family, they said, well, Jill's in a care home. It's probably not right for you to interview her, because, you know, she's getting on, and it might confuse or upset her, sort of thing. Which was fine. I had no intention of ruffling feathers anywhere with them. And then a couple of times later, we'd sort of struck up a rapport, and they said, you know, I think you might be okay meeting her, so we'll give that a go. And so I did meet Gillian. And she was once, for a long time, she was head of the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, and very, very well known. And we spent a couple of hours chatting, and we probably spent more hours chatting about Wimbledon fortnight and stuff completely unrelated to Simon. But she was a very captivating lady. And at the end of our time together, she said, before you go, would you like a drink? And I thought she meant a cup of tea, but of course Simon was a big wine drinker. He loved fine wines, and that's what she meant. And it was a sort of, it wasn't really a would you like, it was you're going to have a glass, you know. So that was probably the highlight, having a glass of wine with Simon's mum. And before I left, she said, what was your name? And I said, Brian. And she said, oh, I do know a Brian, but I think you're my favourite Brian now. She was that kind of happy spirit. She was a really strong lady. But that's probably the highlight of the 2 years. But I think the main purpose of the book was just to try and get people away from the idea that Simon was just Geoffrey Fairbrother. And unfortunately, the TV channels or the nostalgia channels don't necessarily help, because they don't repeat a lot of anything else, the Heidi High of Simon's. He did Life Without George, which was 3 years. He did 2 years of Enemy at the Door, which was a huge success, his first big success. And he was in an ITV sitcom called Singles, he was only in it for one series. He took over from Roger Rees, who went off to do Cheers in America. And it was a really good part because it showed Simon in such a different light, because he was playing an egocentric actor who was, you know, so full of himself, and yet had no reason to be full of himself because he wasn't actually that good. And he played all kinds of quirky, you know, East End barrel boys, you know, one-eyed generals with war stories to tell. And he was fantastic in it. But aside from a few sort of Tales of the Unexpected or Minder episodes where Simon guested, we don't really see any of his television work apart from Heidi High. So it was quite nice to see some of the other things he was in. And it's just a bit of a shame that the nostalgia channels don't give us that option to see a bit more of his work. And when I did see his showreels with Becky, his wife, they showed clips of Cold Light of Day, which was the very last thing he did. And it was a very serious and quite nasty horror film, where he played a child murderer, completely out of character. And he was creepy and sinister and so unpleasant in that film. It was really disturbing. And it shows such a different side of his talents. But I guess that's one of the things, isn't it? If you make such a success of one character, try as you might not shed him. And I don't think Simon ever really wanted to shed Jeffrey. He never got held back by it. He never resented it. He never dismissed people who would yell Heidi High in the streets at him. He was quite content to have, you know, he was quite critical of people who did rebel against that sort of thing, because, you know, they made the success. So you can't then turn around and criticize the public. But yeah, so that was one of the reasons I wrote it, to show the other side of Simon. And also another thing that people always say is, oh yeah, he smoked himself to death. And he, obviously his smoking didn't help him, because he did smoke absolutely like a chimney. He was on 80 a day at one point. But when he died, he died of non-Hodgkin's. And I spoke to his doctor, and he said, no, the smoking, it wasn't smoking-induced. His heart bypass that he'd had a couple of years ago, that's a different story. And of course, medicine's moved on. They wouldn't necessarily have done that procedure if he had it now. But the non-Hodgkin's that killed him, far more, you know, whether you call it fate or luck of the draw sort of thing, but it wasn't smoking-induced. It was just an unfortunate, you know, number was up sort of thing. So it's quite nice, isn't the right word, but it's good to set the record straight a little bit, to say, well, no, Simon didn't just smoke himself into an early grave. That's not what happened. And he's more than Jeffrey Fairbrother, so...